Hey, how's it going? Welcome to the Football Diary podcast once again this week. And Frank Lampard is no longer the Everton manager. He's been sacked to absolutely nobody's surprise in what was dubbed as El Sackico, quite cruelly. They lost 2-0 to West Ham. And obviously the writing was on the wall long ago for Lampard, I think, but he's gone now. And Miles, I don't think it's ever nice to see a situation like this, but Lampard's position had become untenable a while ago, hadn't it really? Wasn't it just down to this particular result, was it really?
Yeah, I guess the biggest surprise of all of this is just that he lasted as long as he did. I think all of us in our predictions at the start of the season said we thought he'd be the first manager out the door. And I don't think any of us got that wrong in terms of merit. Obviously, none of us thought that Tuchel was going to be axed first. And it just seemed that Everton took too long to make the decision. I have to make the comparison. I hate the fact that we always do this between Lampard and Gerrard. But if you look at Villa, for example, they got rid of Gerrard at the right moment. And look where they've kicked on to since. Everton hung on, and now find themselves in real trouble at the halfway point in the season. It was inevitable. He's clearly not a good enough coach at this level. But Everton are a basket case of a club. So mate, I don't really know what to make of this. Who's ended up better off out of this? Lampard for getting away from them or them for getting away from him? It's a difficult call.
I think there's been a lot of people saying that they were 16th in the league when he took over. And obviously they've got a lot worse since then. But it's not just the league position, is it, Dave? It's the style of play, the football that's being played, the money that's been spent. I mean, a lot of that isn't Lampard's fault necessarily. Right. But they've been playing some ugly stuff, Everton, haven't they? They've got through some games by the skin of their teeth. And I think you said, Miles, kind of prolong the inevitable for a bit by playing slightly well in some games, but always seeming to come out okay at the end of it. But for the last few games, it's been a turgid watch for Everton fans, hasn't it, Dave? They've not been pretty at all.
Yeah, they've been trying to dig themselves out of this hole for quite a while now. And it just seems to have been not just obviously within sort of obviously the players and obviously the coaching team, manager, but the whole club is just a chain of sort of indecision, really. If you look at, obviously what Mashiri came out and said that it's not his decision to sack the manager. But then in the past, he's gone on record to say that, you know, these are reasons why we've had to relieve a manager of their duty. So it just kind of sums Everton up as a club, really. But yeah, that they've just been inconsistent for so long. And you've kind of just wondered, when's it going to be the time that he's going to go? Because it's just not been good enough. And you've really got a feel for Everton fans, really, because I just think they've been not necessarily waiting for this moment, but they're waiting for some sort of change within their club. Yeah. I'd love to say that this is going to be the moment that they're actually going to turn around, but I actually fear for them still, because I don't know who can actually come in and make such a drastic change, and we're going to see an upturn in form. It's hard to see for me.
There's so much that needs to change at Everton that a manager is never going to solve that problem. And there's evidence of that in recent history. Look at how many managers Everton have gone through over the last few years. Ever since Moyes left, we've had Roberto Martinez, Koeman. They look like they got it spot on at one point. They brought in Ancelotti. That didn't last very long. Benitez didn't last long. Lampard's not going to last long. It's just there doesn't seem to be any coherence at the club. All their decision-making seems off. If you look at how Dave mentioned how much money they've spent over the last few years, they had that period of time where they just went and spanked 40 million on a bunch of number 10s. None of them worked. Last January, Lampard came in, had a transfer window. And who did he bring in? Dele Alli and Donny van der Beek on the same day. Now, they've signed Dan. Well, it looks pretty much certain that Dan Juma's coming in on loan. Why do you sign a player and then sack the manager the same day? Who's that for now? I understand Everton needs something that's in their squad, but what if the next manager comes in and goes, do you know what? I don't want to play with wingers. Then all of a sudden, you've just made this decision for absolutely nothing. Everton had to do something, and I know that part of that is being proactive in a transfer market. Well, be more proactive with removing Lampard, because there was no way, even if he'd beaten West Ham this weekend, do we seriously think then he's going to go on and have a great season with Everton for the rest of the year? No, you'd have ended up sacking him in 3 weeks' time. Well, 4 weeks' time. It was going to happen. If they'd done it at the start of January and got a new manager in with a transfer window, all right, funds must be limited at Everton right now. I get that. But that's all their own doing. Look, even in the summer, Chelsea offered them, how much, 40 million for Anthony Gordon?
More than that, wasn't it? Yeah. I thought it was like 60 million. And they wanted 80 million.
It's the idea that they've not taken that now. You've got to laugh at yourselves for not taking that. And then the only budget they had, they spanked on Dwight McNeil. Like, it's just, it's an embarrassing situation at the club.
Yeah.
And you're right, Dave, the frustration of the fans, you do understand it. Some of it's been quite ugly. Some of it's been really genuine. That video that came out last week of the fans pleading with Yerry Mina in the street, I thought got really bad press. And actually, I didn't think there was that much wrong with it. The fan was quite calm. No. He wasn't being abusive or anything. He wasn't threatening. He was just genuinely talking to someone. There were other examples that seemed less sweet, let's say, and a bit more savoury. But I don't know what Everton hope to achieve now. Any manager they bring in now isn't going to turn this club around. They're still going to be an absolute mess because they had their chance at an elite manager and he left because it wasn't going to be a good idea for him. I understand Real Madrid come knocking, you move, but I don't know what Everton want to do.
Well, Mashiri spent close to half a billion, it's coming up to now, on transfers since he's taken over, and he's not got a lot to show for it. So like you say, the next manager that comes in is going to have very limited funds, if anything, to play with. So what kind of manager is going to want to come into that kind of situation, rescue a club from relegation on limited funds? Now, it doesn't take a genius to kind of pull out some names from the hat, but who's the favourite for you then, Dave? Who do you think?
I see a lot of fans calling for Bielsa, but I think that's a recipe for disaster.
Not the right squad.
No, and the thing with Bielsa, you look at how long it actually took him to get it right at Leeds as well. Obviously, they had that season where they looked brilliant in that it looked all like they were going to get promotion and it just went terribly wrong at the end of the season. Let's be real, it's that we're halfway through the season and they're not in the Championship looking to gain promotion. They're in the face of relegation, so I just think that would be the wrong appointment for me. Obviously, you were mentioning, Miles, that Dyche is looking like the favourite, and I think that'd probably be the most sensible appointment for me, to be honest. I just don't see who's going to want relish coming in at this time, this point, you know, point in time, and take this job with both hands and see what they can do. Because they're definitely not going to be queuing up for this. I think they'll struggle for applications.
It's mad, isn't it? Because you say all that, they've just waited too long. Because actually, look at some of the managers that have moved into the Premier League this season. A club like Wolves have attracted Julian Lopetegui. Villa have got Emery. Everton should be that sort of bracket. But now, who's available to him? Dyche is the best name available. The other names linked are hilarious. Obviously, Rooney's always going to be linked. Postecoglou at Celtic. I've seen him linked as well. Rafa Benitez is like 14-1, which is that's hilarious, the idea that that's even a consideration. And Nuno is the other one. That, to me, is the most Everton appointment. I would not be shocked at all if he rocked up at Goodison Park now. I think it will be Dyche, though, probably.
Yeah, I think Dyche is the only one who can work under those kind of budget restrictions, first of all, but also make a team difficult to beat. And I mean, Everton's squad isn't terrible. It's borderline Championship at the minute, but they've got some players that could do a lot better. You know, it's a very underperforming squad. Dyche could get a bit more out of them than Lampard did. Lampard's got no experience of a relegation fight. He's got no experience of anything, really, has he? So we were trying to understand his level. I think we've kind of realised now he probably needs to go back down to the Championship maybe and kind of get his confidence back a little bit. But Sean Dyche, for me, seems like the one. I think he's the bookies' favourites as well. But do you think Everton fans would be happy with that? Do they just want survival right now? It's only, 20 games into the season. There's still plenty of football to play, but the gap at the bottom is so tight. So where do Everton aim now, Miles?
I don't think Everton fans would be happy with that. I don't think Everton fans would be happy with any appointment that they will make, because I don't think they'll be happy until there's a change much higher at the club, understandably, absolutely. Yeah. Some of the other names on the list, the most ambitious and the one that would be the most exciting is Thomas Frank, but there's absolutely no way he walks away from Brentford for this job, surely. He'd be absolutely ridiculous. I wonder if maybe they might try and tempt Moyes back with the way that things are going at West Ham, or maybe Brendan Rodgers, that he's in a precarious situation. But there's no positive outcome for me with Everton right now. No. Even if they bring Dyche in and they finish 16th this season, then what? Because they've done that before. They brought Allardyce in on a short-term contract to keep them up. Are you going to go and give Dyche a 3-year deal and hope he builds something? Probably not, let's be totally honest. I don't know what the plan is from Everton. They've sacked him at such an odd time because there's no one that screams out, this is a candidate that would take the club on. And I think that's because Everton don't really know where they want to be right now. They're nowhere near challenging for even the top half, let alone the European places that we're used to seeing Everton flirt around with. So their expectation for this season might genuinely just be, all right, we're probably going to go down. I don't know what else they can hope for now.
I think because it's such a desperate situation, you've got to think that any manager coming in is going to be thinking, well, is there a long-term prospect of me being at the club? Because if you're Sean Dyche and you come into this job, you're thinking, well, if I obviously do the job and keep you up, do you actually want me here for longer than a year, 2 years? And the answer is probably no, which is quite sad, really.
Same for everyone, except maybe like Rooney.
Yeah, but it feels like a similar situation to West Ham. They got David Moyes into steady the ship, then got rid of him, and then realised, well, actually, he's the safe bet for Premier League stability. So I think that could be the case with Dyche. He's got more to offer than he had with Burnley. He's probably going to have more funds in the long run if they can stay afloat, but it's whether they can avoid relegation now.
It's basically the same squad as he had at Burnley, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, true.
I think with Rooney, it's got echoes of Shearer with Newcastle, isn't it, really?
I don't know about that. Rooney has done things managerially since then. Obviously, it's not the highest level or the most pedigree getting Derby relegated, but he's shown a bit about him that he might be able to at least get the fight into Everton for this season. I don't know about long term, but I think they would want to invest in him longer as they tried to with Lampard, I guess. But I don't think there's a good candidate for them right now.
On the subject of West Ham, though, they will have a bit of respite from this result. And it's kind of a testament to how bad Everton were that West Ham managed to win, because they weren't actually amazing. It was just the lesser of two evils out of the two teams. You've said, I think, in the past, Miles, that West Ham have got a better squad than the position they're in. But I think the Premier League this season, that doesn't mean anything, does it? The gap between, 14th and 20th is about 3 points. So can West Ham get a run of results, do you think, after this and try and move further away from that relegation zone?
I think so. I still think Moyes' days are numbered. I think it's another one of those things where it's probably inevitable. West Ham will be fine in the end. They'll probably bring in another manager and we'll see some sort of success. They brought in a couple of players in January, including Danny Ings. Obviously, he'll probably add some goals to their lineup. So I don't worry about West Ham. It's a shocking season, don't get me wrong. And they're not going to achieve what they should have with that squad of players. Because let's not get it twisted. West Ham spent a lot of money in the summer. A lot. I think they were the second highest spenders in the league, or maybe third.
Yeah,
that's a big feat for a club like West Ham off the back of some good success over the last couple of years. So they'll be disappointed, but they're safe, I think. I know it seems silly to say safe when they're as close as they are, but I just cannot see them getting sucked into it.
So from the bottom of the league to the top of the league. So Arsenal beat Manchester United, Dave. I'm going to go into that one now. And I think difficult one to take because it felt, for the most part, before I watched it back anyway, like United were in the game for a while. But Arsenal were actually in control at all times. I think United were quite clinical to get their two goals. Arsenal winning the game with a 90th minute winner. I think you've got to say, Dave, even as a United fan, thoroughly deserved for Arsenal. And surely the biggest kind of indication yet of their title credentials.
Yeah, as an Arsenal fan, you've got to be loving what they're obviously going through at the moment, the way they're playing. And this game, especially for the neutrals, must have been easy on the eye. For a United fan, it was a nightmare to watch. especially the last 20 minutes. I mean, for 70 minutes, it was actually quite an even game. But the last 20 minutes, it was a struggle for United just to get a foothold. They were losing battles, those 50-50s, which they were kind of, winning. First half, I thought we played really well. I just thought we had so many careless moments in this game. And Erik ten Hag came out after the game and did say, obviously, we folded like a pack of cards in all three goals that we conceded. And I can see what he means in a way, because we just gave up possession too easily in certain areas. Obviously, the first goal, Wan-Bissaka gets it, and obviously he gets a pass from De Gea, which he probably doesn't want. But to be honest, it actually wasn't a difficult situation. All he's got to do is just punt it up the line if he's in a bit of difficulty, but he loses the ball there. Arsenal obviously gain possession, do really well actually to score obviously the goal, really good goal, but Wan-Bissaka caught out again at the back post. How many times do you have to say that? And Wan-Bissaka must have conceded so many goals at the back post for United, it's untrue. And I can see why people say he's a good defender. I'd say yes and no. I think one-on-1v1 is really good, but he gets into these positions too often where he has to make last-ditch tackles, and thankfully he's absolutely brilliant. Somehow, I don't understand how we managed to get his legs into these positions to actually swipe the ball away from in some of these sliding challenges, but he does. And I just feel like in that team, with this squad at the moment, the best we can be looking for is top four, because once we lose a couple of players, we just don't have the strength in depth to replace them. And we've seen that with, obviously, Dallo. We've seen it with Casemiro. We've not got a striker who can actually stay fit, a striker who's arguably good enough. Obviously, a Martial can't stay fit. So I think for what we're doing now, I think we're overachieving. I really do. I don't think we're ever in this title race. City and Arsenal are by far the best teams in this league. City are in a position where they obviously have the squad. Arsenal don't as much, I wouldn't say. So if they get a couple of injuries, that could affect them. But I'm proud of you. I came out of this game actually being quite proud of United, because I thought we actually did play well and we kind of went toe-to-toe with Arsenal at times in periods in the game. But I did feel a lot more gutted midweek when we should have beat Palace and we didn't. But thankfully, we're kind of in a position where the teams below us are all dropping points as well. We're not actually losing any ground. We're still comfortably sort of in the top four for the time being. But yeah, I don't think we were too threatening. I don't think we were threatened enough at times. I think that our second goal sort of came out of the blue. It obviously came shortly after they took the lead, didn't they, with Saka. I thought Saka was brilliant in this game, really threatening. Martinelli was kept quite quiet. But yeah, that's the thing with Arsenal. The way they play, they just attack you from all angles. And you can see sort of the influence that Pep's had on Arteta as a coach, in the way they kind of just switch and transition so smoothly. And it's just great to watch.
They were relentless, really. And I think that was the difference between the two teams. They created so many chances, Arsenal. And United didn't have as many by some stretch, you know, but they took their two goals really, really well. Martinez's header actually was quite cleverly done.
Amazing.
But Arsenal, I think, are just that much better this season, and they're further into their project, I think, by some way, aren't they, by a couple of seasons than United are. So yeah, right for United fans to be accepting of this reality check, but the goal is still going to be top four. But for Arsenal, I mean, what does this mean for them now? It's such a test for them to beat the only team that's beaten them this season in the league, Miles. What do you think they'll take from this? Are they going to get carried away? We've had some stick from a few Arsenal fans for getting too carried away on their behalf. So how do they feel now, do you think?
I think there's a quiet optimism about Arsenal, obviously, and their fans will be quietly thinking, yeah, we should win this. Some people not so quiet, of course, but we had that conversation. No, it's telling, because they're in such a good position, and you mentioned about them being further along in the project than Man United, and that is very true, but that shows what the right decisions can do for a club, because actually United and Arsenal were in a really similar position. They had this legacy manager who would help them to lengths of success, leave the club, and then they had to deal with how do we move forward from here. Now, Arsenal obviously brought in Emery, and it wasn't too bad, but they weren't happy with it and moved to Arteta quite quickly and stuck with him. Whereas United have kind of farted about a little bit, if we're honest. They actually lost Ferguson before Arsenal lost Wenger as well. So in theory, United should be further along in their development, but they're not, based on the wrong decisions and poor recruitment. Whereas Arsenal's recruitment is all of a sudden looking superb. If you look at the level of players that Arsenal have brought in, developed and brought out of the academy, United can't compare right now, really. Obviously, there's some hope in the United squad with players like Garnacho, and of course, we have to acknowledge Rashford. But then when you look at someone like McTominay, he's nowhere near up to the standard. And actually, Man United's starting 11, how many of even them would get in any other top four side? Very few of them. So Ten Hag is obviously doing something, getting them to that level, but Arteta's done so much more already. And that's really impressive for Arsenal, because player for player, they just had more quality, definitely, which is a weird thing to say about these two sides, because only last season Arsenal were struggling to make the top four, of course, and this upturn in form is down to very good coaching, consistency, and a real good team spirit. And it was interesting in this game, because I actually thought in the first half, United had the better of it, and Arsenal had a lot of problems to address, particularly how they dealt with Rashford. because Ben White was really, really struggling with him. Partey looked quite, I don't know, almost shaky at times when he was trying to defend. Much better at bringing the ball forward, of course, but Rashford was having all sorts of joy. And obviously he addressed that at half-time by bringing Tomiyasu on. He at times still kind of struggled with Rashford, but dealt with it a lot more efficiently. And then the game changes because United don't have any depth. And when it was clear they needed to make a change, the only one they could make was bringing on Fred for Antony. I thought that was the wrong change. I understood the logic behind it because Saka was cutting inside so freely that you needed to put someone in the middle that was going to have a bit more energy to try and track him at least. But what you also do by doing that is completely take away any attacking impetus that you've got and free Arsenal's fullbacks up. Look how much... Once Rashford is on his own up front and Antony's not on the other side, all of a sudden, United's forward line goes like this and comes much more narrow. And Arsenal's fullback just moved that much higher up the pitch. And Zinchenko and Tomiyasu were able to join in the attacks. And all of a sudden, United could not deal with it. They were absolutely overloaded for that last 20 minutes. And it's a shame for Fred because really, with Casemiro gone, it was his chance to just show this is what stability I can bring to the side. And I think, if anything, it disrupted it. It was the wrong change. Maybe it should have been Eriksen for Fred to keep that attacking momentum as well and give Arsenal something to think about. But they just didn't look like they were struggling at all, Arsenal. The quality of Saka is just sublime. He's got to be considered world-class right now. I don't know how many players are better than him in world football right now. Odegaard's getting a lot of praise because he's been such a rich vein of form right now. But it feels like Saka's been doing this for 3-4 years now. He's Arsenal's most important player by some distance. And even when we talk about the injuries that Arsenal could sustain and what that means to them moving forward, look at Nketiah. 2 goals against United. He slotted in perfectly. They've got Trossard now, a little bit more depth. Arsenal have to win the league. I know they've still got to play City twice, but this gap and the run of form they're on, where else do they drop points? Realistically, we were talking about it, and this is where we mentioned, obviously, what we were talking about last week, but Norwich are the only side ever to have a lead as big as Arsenal's at this point of the season and not go on to win the league. And that was the first Premier League season ever. Every other team has gone on and won it from this sort of position. The biggest lead ever dropped at this point was Liverpool. And I think it was 5 points. And maybe Newcastle with 7 in the Keegan season.
Yeah.
So Arsenal have to look at this now and go, never mind playing City twice. We are the favourites. They have to go on and get it done now. And they deserve it. They absolutely deserve it. They're clearly the best team in the league right now.
Yeah, I think this United game as well was a chance for a few players to stand up and show their class. I think Saka was the main one from that. Yeah. I thought Zinchenko was great as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably his best game in an Arsenal shirt. He was so effective. But Saka's goal, I think you could probably argue, although it was so perfect almost in its positioning, I think Casemiro is probably going to get to that. I really do. Eriksen was nowhere near him when he took the shot. And I think Casemiro probably would attract his cut inside better. But, you know, small margins. And I think on the grand scheme of things, Arsenal were the much better team. And like I say, in their evolution, they are showing what trusting a manager does, trusting a system and an ethos does as well. And there are shades of Man City about Arsenal as well, which is, I think Arteta's watched the City game the other week from United and seen how they struggled and figured out how to kind of counteract that. And United did struggle. They were worked hard. They were pressed hard. There's a lot of running from Arsenal's players. And you could see the age showing through there as well. They're just an energetic, enthusiastic, enterprising team of players. And I really enjoyed watching the game. It was a bit of a throwback to how it used to be without the handbags necessarily. But loads of young players showing their class at a great stage of their careers. Yeah, I loved it.
I actually think United could learn a lot of lessons from Arsenal. I know you won't appreciate me saying that as United fans. But like you say, the process they've been through and the way they've developed players rather than just going and spanking big fees on players. I know they've spent a lot of money, but they've learnt lessons from that too. I mean, look at like Nicola Pepe. He's gone now. Arteta's reshaping it. He'd rather bring someone like Martinelli through, who I think cost 8 million. Amazing. Erdogan was 30. That's nothing for a player of his quality, really. And I think that is a really good process that they've clearly got a good scouting system in place that's helped them develop this squad. And it's made them so threatening. Because you say Martinelli was quiet in this game. I agree. I actually thought it was one of the quieter games we've seen of him all season. But that's just this game. Because you had something else to think about. You had to think about Saka. And then in another game, it's all going to be Odegaard. And you don't know where Arsenal are going to hurt you right now. But they've got so many avenues to do it. Actually, I wouldn't feel as threatened playing against City as I would with Arsenal, like fairly comfortably. Because you know what City are going to try and do. Arsenal almost have like this unpredictable edge about them as well that comes with class. I think they're brilliant. I really enjoy watching them at the moment.
I think you mentioned Trossard as well. I think he's a smart addition to the squad. And we were talking about him, you know, a few months ago as being one of the standout players of this Premier League season. You know, he's been played brilliantly, hasn't he? Started really well. But he's a player that's coming into this Arsenal team at a time when he's probably going to have to sit on the bench for a while and make an impact as a sub. But what a sub to bring on, you know, as a cover for the players they've already got. Really smart move from them, I think. But yeah, the pressure on the City game is going to be huge now, isn't it? Because that game, it carries so much. And again, another indicator of where Arsenal are, definitely. So all eyes on that one, I think. But talking about City, Dave, they had two impressive results this week, didn't they? Starting on Thursday night, I think it was, against Spurs. They were 2-0 down at halftime. It's a harsh result to go into halftime with. But they turned it around massively. And it felt to me like City's season kind of turned a corner a little bit then. It felt like they snapped into City of old. Haaland scored. Obviously got a hat-trick at the weekend against Wolves as well. Are City still kind of the best team in England, really, on paper, in terms of squad? Obviously not in form this season, but their strength can't be denied, really, can it?
Yeah, I mean, they've been up and down, haven't they, over the last few weeks, few months even, since the season began. And I've got a question for you. Do you think Man City are a better, more unpredictable side without Erling Haaland in that front three?
No. I think Haaland makes any team better in the world, doesn't he?
No.
The only thing for me is they've become inconsistent with him there because they're still figuring out how to kind of get the best out of all the players at their disposal.
I think
Arsenal are the most consistent team right now, and that shows.
I agree with what you're saying, but you look at, obviously, we obviously speak about, even last year, the year before, we were talking about City and saying they set up with a system where they can play with a false nine. They don't play with a true striker. And they look how they've performed. And they had that air of unpredictability about them. I think teams, especially the big, you look at United against City, he was completely anonymous, Haaland. They dealt with him easily. Obviously, we haven't had Luke Shaw playing at centre-back, and he pocketed him. It was straightforward. City couldn't create chances. Now, you look at, obviously, what they've done in the past, and you see those players interchanging in those front three positions. It's so much more difficult to defend. And you look at how Arsenal played against United. Miles saying, you don't know what angles are going to come from. And I think that's where City are at their strongest. You can say about Haaland and obviously the amount of goals that he scores, but he's not... How many of the big teams he's scored against this season? United dealt with him easily in this game.
Are you forgetting the other one though, Dave?
Oh, we were absolutely terrible that game. That was nothing to do with Haaland. That was just United being absolutely useless. But I just think they are easier to defend against with him with him up front than they are without. I know that obviously that carries a lot of, you know, it's a big statement to make, but I just think they are harder to defend against when they're actually in their interchange, how they interchange as a front three. The only thing I will say about them is they have lost a lot of pace, losing Sterling in that position. I just feel like they do need probably another winger or two. But when you look at Mahrez at a minute, when he's probably their best player at the minute in terms of form, I think he's been outstanding.
Got a guy calling from now on. Hot takes, Holt. No, ludicrous. I love you, Dave. That's mental. You talk about City being an easier team to defend against because they've got a player who scored 25 goals in 19 games. Like, that's not easy to defend against at all. It's really easy to be reactionary with these things. I've got to be totally honest. Haaland has a couple of games where he doesn't score, and you think, well, busted flush, because we're just used to these mad numbers he's starting.
The amount of times that Alvarez has come on this season and made an impact, and City look like a completely different team.
Because that's dead.
And Haaland's not in it.
How many teams don't do that, though, where they play one way for 60 minutes, they change their system, bring on a very, very good player, a World Cup winner, and all of a sudden, a defence has got something different to think about. That's not a criticism of Haaland. That's just good squad management. I understand the thought process of how clinical City were across the pitch before, but having a focal point, I don't think harms them. I think there are other things that let them down more so. The goal scoring is not necessarily the problem. If you compare Arsenal and City's defence right now, How many of City's defenders on current form get into the Arsenal squad, into the Arsenal 11? I don't think I'll take any of them.
True.
And none of them are in the kind of form we saw last season. Kyle Walker's obviously a year older. Cancelo's not.
They've had injuries, though, as well.
As good as the other. Yeah, of course, they have, of course. But that's a problem they've had to contend with this season, not Haaland scoring loads of goals. I think it's just one of those transitions where, and this is what Pep's brilliant at in some ways, and what we're seeing Liverpool struggle with now. We talked literally last 100%. Week about how one of the most successful things the manager can do is rebuild a squad and start again. Change the system once people start to cotton onto it. City couldn't play the way that he played every single year. Things change. So he's having to now adapt his system and bring a number nine into it. They might not win the league this year. They'll probably win the Champions League. You have to say, you imagine they're going to be favourites for that. And all of a sudden, that's a great season for Man City. And we're saying Haaland was the difference. I think it's really quick to go, oh, I think they're a worse team. And he's got, what, 4 hat-tricks already in 19 games. I know it's Wolves, but Wolves have had an upturn in form recently. That's a great result still, and scored against Spurs again. So he's started. There was already talk about, oh, since the World Cup, he's not scored. All right, here's 4 goals for you in 2 games. It's just a joke. He's unbelievable.
Yeah. Speaking of teams that have seen an upturn in fortune, I'm going to move on to Aston Villa now, Miles,
yes.
If that's cool with you.
It's definitely cool with me at the moment.
Unai Emery's been in charge now. He's put his mark on this Aston Villa squad. And apart from a couple of blips, they've looked very solid, haven't they? And they keep on getting results. They're climbing the table. They're moving away from any sort of relegation threat. Although, again, early days, that can still change quite quickly.
Not for us.
Are you happy with what you see now, man? Are you happy with the squad balance? Are you happy with the players' performances as well individually?
100%. It's amazing. It's absolutely brilliant. There's a few things I'd still like fixing, obviously. But you have to give massive credit to Emery and what he's done to turn them around. Because sadly, because we sit in 11th right now, and that's obviously the bottom half picture, there is still that conversation of how many points away from relegation are you? We're 11 points clear of relegation. We're 3 points off 6th. That's where Villa are at. They're not in the relegation conversation. They're in the European conversation again.
Yeah.
And that is huge from the start of the season we had. We got 12, I think we had 12 points in 13 games under Gerrard. Emery's already bettered that in 7. I think we're on 15 now, or 16 points now in 7 games under Emery. It's ridiculous. That's absolutely amazing. And he's not changed the squad. He's brought in 2 players so far, and one of them's only signed today.
Well, that begs the question then. I know you said Steven Gerrard was a massive handicap.
He's awful.
But tactically, what does Unai Emery do to this Villa squad to make them more difficult to beat and easier to score goals? What has he done?
One thing that's really helped him, obviously, was bringing Boubacar Kamara back in. That's not Gerrard's fault. He picked up an injury. And actually, from all accounts, Gerrard was instrumental in getting into the club. He is absolutely phenomenal. I love watching him play football. He's so classy. He's so assured. He reads the game incredibly well. And a midfield two of him and Douglas Luiz on the kind of form they're in, there aren't many centre midfield pairings better in the league. I genuinely believe that. Along with that, there's an upturn in form for Leon Bailey. He looks much sharper, much brighter. Watkins, he's clearly backed Watkins in this window. I think selling Danny Ings is a bit of a statement of, I trust you. He's already said he doesn't expect to bring in a replacement number 9 this summer. He expects, he expects to wait till the end of the season because Watkins will be his striker. And he's proven that he's worth it. The defence is so much better. Tyrone Mings looks in the best form he's been in a really long time. Ezri Konsa is back to where he should be. I think no player in the Premier League has got a better take-on percentage than Ezri Konsa this season. Like, in terms of how many players have run at him and he's just dealt with it. He looks so much sharper all of a sudden. We look just more organised. We're better coached. There's fluid football. They pass the ball so much better. There's an identity, a style, a formation, consistency. And he's playing the right players. That's fundamentally one of the biggest things. You don't have to be a genius to work out where Gerrard was going wrong. And Emery saw it within a week, clearly. Because look at the results we've had. You say we've had a couple of blips. I think we've had one blip, the Stevenage game. And that's down to a really poor bit of concentration from one player and poor squad depth. And all of a sudden, you bottled it. Let's be honest. That happens. It's annoying. Other than that, the only game we've lost in the league so far was to Liverpool. And even that was close. And come on, you take that really, don't you? We look phenomenal. There's definitely business to be done. I think we need some depth in the squad because there's players leaving left, right, and centre. Obviously, Ings left. We got some money in for him, which is a bit of a shame, but understandable. Jan Bednarek's been recalled by Southampton today. That's another player gone. Sanson's gone. Gilbert's gone. It looks like Nakamba will go. So there's quite a lot of business to be done. At the moment, we've only got two strikers in the squad. And one of them's literally signed today. This Colombian youth international, Duran, who, by all accounts, is phenomenal. A lot of big clubs looking at him. Yeah. There was a lovely message on Villa's socials today of him at Villa Park with Juan Pablo Angel doing a little video message for him about what it means to play for Aston Villa. It was brilliant. Nice. It was really, really nice to watch. But Emery will want to do business. There's some big names being linked that I'm quite excited by. And we'll just see where we end up by the end of January. But we should kick on now. We should be aiming for Europe.
I think they were slightly fortunate in this game against Southampton, which was weird because it was stopped for, what, 9 minutes for a drone hovering over the pitch. But Dave, do you think this kind of result where they do grind out a result where it was kind of contentious, there's arguments that Southampton should have scored a goal, right?
Yeah.
But they won. They got the 3 points, Dave. Is that kind of what's making the difference now between Aston Villa and the rest and making them climb the league a little bit? That sort of extra edge, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised by it, though. We've seen Emery do this at, you know, countless clubs. We've been on the receiving end of results as well.
This season, too.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of do pose the question and think, is this, you know, have we had a bit of luck here? But you look, they did it against Leeds as well. They were arguably the worst team in that game, and they got the result just over the line. So you've got to give him a lot of credit. I think what he's done there so far is really, really good. And they could be a bit of a dark horse for Europe, really. Obviously, top four is out of the question. But if they could get Europa Conference League, it's not out of the question what he's doing there. I think he's just addressed the basics as well. If you look at what he's done, obviously, with the defence miles, they just look so much better structured. Their attacking game has got far better. They just looked so toothless before when Gerrard was in charge, and they actually look threatening now. And even against, if you look at, we were mentioning a couple of weeks ago, look at the results they've got against the big teams. They show up. They obviously don't roll over like they did in previous regimes. And it could be up there for manager of the year, Emery.
It's amazing what kind of turnaround he's managed to do in this short space of time, but the squad should have been capable of this. We've got the World Cup winning goalkeeper. We've got internationals throughout the squad. There are a lot of players in that Villa squad that would improve a lot of top four teams. Let's be honest, their Newcastle squad really that much better than Villa's. They're playing better and Eddie Howe has got them coached better this season. But if you'd offered me both squads on paper at the start of the season, there's Bruno Guimaraes, Alexander Isak. Am I forgetting anyone that I would take in the Villa squad over who we've got currently? Almiron on current form? Other than that, no. But they're top four because they're well coached. So now Villa have got a good coach in. I'm worried about how light the squad is. But if we can bring in a few names in January, there's a few players being linked. Like Guendouzi looks like that's going to happen, which is quite interesting. There's a lot of talk of Gerard Deulofeu, who actually has been in really, really good form in Serie A. So he's also 28. Gerard Deulofeu has been around forever. I couldn't believe how young he was.
It does.
Moussa Dembélé from Lyon, that looks like another likely one. There's names on the list. There's one obvious one that's on the market right now that I think we have to talk about. Villa aren't being touted for a move yet, but I'm desperate for them to move in for. Zaniolo is being made available by Roma and it looks like he's going to go to either Spurs, Leeds or Brighton. If Leeds and Brighton are in for Zaniolo and Villa don't put a bid in, I am going to be fuming. Because that is exactly the kind of player we need. I know he's got his injury records. He's not necessarily got the best discipline record. And his goal-scoring form has dropped off since his last few injuries. But he just hasn't looked settled at Roma for quite a while. A new challenge, I would love him at Villa. Because what he can do and how electric he can be, that's exactly the sort of thing we need in our squad.
Yeah, all change at Villa and for the better, it seems.
Yeah.
And I think that was you pretty much saying Villa are top four next season. Was that the way you were equating it with Newcastle's form?
Can I say top six?
Top six.
I'll take that.
Anyway, you mentioned briefly, I'm going to finish the pod with talk about Serie A, actually. So Juventus docked 15 points. You know, it's not the first time they've been docked points heavily. But what do you make of that? That's crazy. That's obviously made the top four picture in Serie A look wide open. And Roma look really positive at the back of this now.
Yeah.
But Juventus, what's going on there?
It's a mess. And I wonder if they're quietly okay with it for this year in a weird way. It's brought around a lot of change at the top. Obviously, we've seen a lot of people leave Nedved, Agnelli. It's a big change. Paratici at Tottenham obviously is involved as well somehow. So there's still a lot to come out about exactly what's happened with this financial irregularity. But 15 points this season when they're not competing for the title, and next season they'll probably get rid of Allegri and have Conte back. I think they'd rather see that happen now than next year. It's weird
Crazy.
because they had started to have a bit of an upturn in form until that Napoli game. They were winning games quite quietly, like 1-0, 2-0. Chiesa had come back, and they did shoot right back up the table. And I think they were a point off second before this deduction. Now, all of a sudden, they're completely out of the picture. The club's an absolute mess, and it has been for a long time. We knew this was going to happen. Look at the money that they splashed on bringing Ronaldo in, De Ligt in. They've just not recouped any of that. And instead, they just keep signing players. When was the last time? I know Juve sold De Ligt in the summer, but at a loss. Like, they don't seem to have any proper strategy, and it's always going to be there to bite them. And they're so stubborn with their structure that they'll happily watch themselves coast to a sixth, seventh finish this
Did you
season.
take Pogba on loan at Villa?
Well, I think United would take him on loan right now, wouldn't they, for a bit of depth in midfield?
No.
You say he wants a
Dressing
new
room's good.
challenge.
Let's leave that.
Do you know what? There's a few players though that are supposedly available, and one of them that Villa have been looking at is Weston McKennie. I'd take that 100%. If I was a young player at Juventus right now, I'd think I'd be looking for a way out. It's inevitable that Conte will be there next season. I'm very confident of that, and I just don't really know how Juventus improve on this situation because Napoli keep getting stronger. They'll probably sell in the summer. You'll probably see Osimhen leave. Kvaratskhelia will probably leave. But then I'd trust Napoli with that money more than I'd trust Juventus with that money. Roma
What a
are
shame that'd
quietly
be,
building
though.
something. The Milan clubs look a lot stronger again. Lazio is still in the picture. It would be really easy for this team that won nine titles in a row to kind of fade into nothingness and be about sixth for a while. Who knows? It's worrying because that
Tell
Juve
you what,
squad's not
though,
great.
doesn't it make you realise, Dave, how obvious it is now that these clubs are so desperate for a European Super League? Juventus were the biggest cheerleaders,
They
weren't they?
still
It makes
are.
sense now.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense, doesn't it? The mess that they're in, and
Yeah.
yeah, it's especially everything that's come out. And let's be honest, they're not, definitely in the past they've obviously had their problems as well. We obviously got relegated, didn't they? So it just makes you worry, really, what is kind of under the surface. How ugly has it got? And yeah, it's definitely worrying times, and something you just don't want to see, isn't it? It's just the worst about when things like this come out. It's just the worst news for football fans, and it's got a really bitter taste to
The difficult thing for Juve as well is if they want to recoup any cash, how many sellable assets have they really got that they could get good money for?
They've got a lot of players that are quite old.
Yeah,
They've brought
exactly.
an
That's what
aging
I mean.
squad.
They played against Napoli with Danilo and Alexandro playing in the back three still. Like, that's the kind of squad they've got. They could probably get money for Chiesa, but you'd never
Vlahovic.
want to sell him. Vlahovic would probably be one of them, and McKennie. Then they have started to bring some young players through this season. And Allegri's given minutes to a lot of teenagers to try and kick the rest of the squad up the backside. But you're not going to get big fees for them. Not yet, anyway. They're not the kind of level that someone like Pedri or Gavi are at when they come through at that age. It's still very much a de developmental phase. You're not going to sell Kostic or Di Maria for big fees, or Pogba for big fees. And instead, Juve just keep investing and not really having a plan of what to do when that goes wrong. Because now they're going to miss European football as well. So their income for next year is
Yeah.
even lower. I don't know what their plan is.
Well, it really makes you wonder whether financial fair play is A, actually being monitored as closely as we think, and B, are there any other clubs going to be caught short on this? Because Man City kind of got
Chelsea,
away with it, didn't they? Chelsea, I wonder what that's
surely,
going to look like in a year or two's
Noni
time.
Madueke. How have they done that?
Another one, yeah.
For us to come in for him, because we're desperate for a winger, and I thought 35 million, that's a steal. And Chelsea all of a sudden pop up, and I thought, how has that happened? How many wingers do they need?
On the left as well. I think, having said that, Mudryk had a really positive debut, didn't he? He looked lively.
They will play on the right, but when you've just signed Sterling as well, not that long ago, you've already got Ziyech, Pulisic, Mudrick. I'm probably forgetting about 10 names as well. It's ridiculous. While you were talking about Serie A, though, can I just give a really quick shout out to something?
Go for it.
Lookman, second top scorer in the league.
Yeah.
On absolute fire. He's been so good recently for Atalanta. He looks brilliant. It's really nice to see because he's actually quite young still. And he's always had that promise. We never really saw it in England to the level that we wanted. He didn't really do enough at either Everton or Leicester. But he just clearly loves being in Europe. And now there's two Nigerians top scorers in Serie A. That's amazing.
I think from what I understand, I think Leicester actually wanted him permanently, but they just didn't have the funds to make it happen.
You'd imagine they would have wanted him because he would be great for their squad. And actually, on current form, yeah, clearly they were underutilizing him last season. He's a very good player, really threatening. And Atalanta just really know how to spot a player, don't they?
Yeah, true. I think Serie A is going to get more interesting the second half of the season in the light of what's happened, because Juventus out of the top four picture looks tasty at that, at the top of the league, doesn't it?
It's so tight between like second and sixth now. It's really, really tight. Napoli have got a decent little lead now. Roma are playing them, I think, this weekend. So that'll be interesting. But they've been really interesting to watch recently. Like, well, I say interesting, quite the opposite. They got the lowest XG against in all of Europe right now. So Mourinho is getting something right. But there seems to be a little bit of unrest building, I'm not going to lie. Zaniolo said he wants to leave and is not in the squad or training. Smalling apparently is talking to Juventus and Inter about a deal in the summer as well. There's still Rick Karsdorp's deal that looks a bizarre one, that they're just desperate to sell him and can't get rid. But then you've got Paulo Dybala, who's just phenomenal. He's just been so good. Two assists again at the weekend. I think he's the fastest player to have got 10 goal contributions for Roma since like 2004. So he's been brilliant. He's been so good.
Yeah, it's been impressive.
Yeah, and so Abraham's finally scoring goals.
We're going to say we still don't know how good Mourinho is as a coach in Italy, because, I mean, are Roma in a good place or not?
Yeah, I think they'll take it. If they're getting to the top four this season, they're so happy. And they could. Yeah, they absolutely could.
Yeah. On that note, guys, that's the end of this week's pod. Thanks again for watching. You'll notice we've got a different format this time around. You're listening to this on audio, when actually we've actually got this broken down into smaller chunks on our YouTube channel. So if you prefer watching instead of listening, head over to there and you'll find us. And while you're there, please do hit subscribe. We'd really appreciate it. Guys, thanks for your company. I'll see you again next week, hopefully.
Look forward to it, man.